welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee with the Center for Science and Culture. Today we have with us on the show Casey Luskin, Research Coordinator at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. He holds both a law degree from the University of San Diego and a master's degree in Earth Sciences from the University of California at San Diego. Casey is a contributor to Debating Darwin's Doubt, set to be released this summer, and is here today to discuss the book with us. Casey, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
That's great to be back.
I want to continue our discussion of Debating Darwin's Doubt, the collection of responses to critics of Stephen Meyer's book, Darwin's Doubt. So, Casey, can we talk a little bit more about Stephen Meyer's epilogue response? But Casey, can we dive in a little bit more to the response to Charles Marshall?
Yeah, definitely.
So who is Charles Marshall and where is his review of Darwin's Doubt published?
So Charles Marshall is a biologist at the University of California, Berkeley, and he's an expert in the Cambrian period. He actually looks at both sort of the paleontology side and the biology side of things to try to come up with explanations for early animal evolution. And he's also a director of the UC Berkeley Museum of Paleontology, which is a pretty big deal. And he published a review of Darwin's Doubt in the fall of 2013 in the journal Science. And the journal Science, of course, is one of the most prestigious scientific journals in the world, certainly the most prestigious in the United States. And essentially, the review was very respectful. I mean, it took Stephen Meyer's book seriously. Obviously, he didn't agree with Meyer's arguments and he had plenty of criticisms to make, but it was at least a thoughtful and respectful review that attempted to engage some of Meyer's arguments.
What did Marshall argue, however, about the origin of new information?
Yeah, so this was a bit surprising. He actually did try to address this topic, but not in the way that you might expect. You would normally expect that if somebody's going to try to address the topic of the origin of information that was needed to build all the new body plans, then they would sort of address it square on, directly explain how that information arose. What Marshall did was he said, look, Stephen Meyer focuses a lot of his book on the origin of the genes that would be necessary to build these body plans. But he says the new information needed to build these body plans did not reside in the genes. It resided in these things called developmental gene regulatory networks, where basically you have these genes that already exist, and you're changing the way that they're interacting with one another in order to build an animal body plan. So he basically said the genes that were used to build animals might have arisen long before the Cambrian, way back in the pre-Cambrian at some point. The Cambrian explosion, according to Marshall, was interesting because it involved the origin of these new DGRNs, these new developmental gene regulatory networks, where the interactions and the patterning of these genes were changing so that they could basically build all these new types of diverse body plans. So in a sense, he didn't really explain the origin of the new genetic information needed to explain animals. Instead, he kind of pushed the question back.
Interesting. What did Marshall say about the origin of new body plans, and how did that reverse the normal method of historical science?
Yeah, Sarah, so this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with these developmental gene regulatory networks, where basically Charles Marshall said that there are these networks of genes that regulate the timing and the expression of other genes, and by doing so, they're able to help construct an animal's body plan in its earliest stages of development. So what Marshall said is that we can tweak these developmental gene regulatory networks to build new body plans. Well, it's not as if Steve Meyer didn't deal with this in the book Darwin's Doubt. This was not a new topic that was raised suddenly that Steve Meyer had not already heard of. In fact, in Darwin's Doubt, he deals with these developmental gene regulatory networks quite a bit. And what he points out is that the experimental literature shows that whenever we do mutations on these developmental gene regulatory networks so that they're interrupted, they're perturbed, you don't get a new body plan. Instead, what you get is a dead animal. They do not generate new body plans when we mutate them. In every single case, essentially, we get a dead organism. So these DGRNs are very sensitive to mutations and they're actually very inelastic. It's not the case that the experimental evidence shows that we can mutate them to build something new. So Charles Marshall is aware of this. He's read Darwin's Doubt. He knows the literature and the experimental research that Steve Meyer cites. And his response is, well, okay, maybe somewhere early back there in early animal evolution, things were different than they are today. Maybe essentially the early animal body plans were more plastic. And these DGRNs at that time were more labile or more plastic and more elastic, more able to tolerate these mutations and then change into a new radically different kind of organism. So Steve Meyer made, I think, a really interesting point in response to Charles Marshall in his chapter in Debating Darwin's Doubt, which I highly recommend that people read to get the full story. But essentially what Steve Meyer says is that Marshall has reversed the epistemological priority of historical sciences. Well, what does that mean? Well, the way historical sciences are supposed to work is the present is the key to the past, okay? We look at present day causes that are now in operation. We try to understand how the world works. Well, when we look at these DGRNs, we find that when we mutate them, they do not generate new body plans, okay? It doesn't happen. So what Steve Meyer is saying is only if Charles Marshall ignores all of the experimental evidence that we have, is he able to claim that these things were more elastic, more plastic in the past, so that we could get new body plans. So what Marshall is doing essentially is he's putting the theory ahead of the data. The theory is coming before the experimental research, whereas normally in historical sciences, you're supposed to say that the experimental research or the data gives you a toolkit that you can then use to develop your theory. And Charles Marshall is saying, I'm going to ignore what the data says. I'm going to ignore what the research shows. And I'm going to just make this assertion that, yeah, these things could evolve quite easily in the past. Well, it's very nice to make assertions like that. But in science, you need to have some evidence to back them up. And the evidence in this case is on Steve Meyer's side and not on Charles Marshall's side.
So how did the New York Times and the journal Science team up when Marshall's review came out? What was their argument regarding the cause of the Cambrian explosion?
So this was a really interesting part of the story, Sarah. The day that Charles Marshall's review was published in the journal Science, Science also carried an article by two leading biologists trying to explain how the Cambrian explosion happened. And the exact same day, there was also an article in the New York Times that was titled A New Approach to Explaining Evolution's Big Bang, which basically reviewed this article in Science and tried to explain how the Cambrian explosion occurred. Now, what's interesting is that, yes, Charles Marshall's review of Meyer's book did cite, of course, Meyer's book. But the other Science paper didn't say anything about Meyer's book and the challenges that it was posing, nor did the New York Times article. Yet both were framed as if they were exactly trying to rebut Stephen Meyer's arguments. So we kind of saw this as an example, and we saw this a few times in other papers as well that came out where they were trying to rebut Stephen Meyer without actually mentioning his name or mentioning his book. It was like, you know, the unmentioned book is not worth reading. So this was quite interesting. And there's a couple other chapters actually in Debating Darwin's out where we talk about this phenomenon of trying to refute Stephen Meyer without actually mentioning him. Okay, so what did this article in the journal Science, along with this article in the New York Times, say about how the Cambrian explosion took place? Well, in many ways, they paralleled what Charles Marshall's approach was. They didn't say that in order to generate all the new body plans in the Cambrian that you needed a bunch of genes. What they actually said was that many of the genes that are needed to build animals arose over 100 million years before the Cambrian explosion. In fact, the Science paper notes a, quote, apparent 100 million year gap between the end of evolutionary innovation and its consequences. And they said that basically that for over 100 million years, these animals had the, quote unquote, genetic capacity to evolve these body plans, but it did nothing. They were not used to be, quote unquote, expressed to build these body plans for over 100 million years. And so that is a quite bizarre argument. What you're basically saying is that 100 million years before the Cambrian explosion, organisms evolved the ability to evolve into these diverse body plans, but none of that was expressed for 100 million years until, according to this paper in Science, there was an environmental trigger, okay? So environmental trigger is some kind of a major perturbation in the Earth's climate or something in the Earth's environment. Now, environmental catastrophes in the Earth's history are a dime a dozen. You have comets and meteorites that might be hitting the Earth. You have periods of glaciation. You have periods of extreme warmth. And so as the theory goes, prior to the Cambrian, the Earth was very cold. But then according to this paper, there was a rise in the sea level, maybe an increase in the temperature, and that drowned lots of parts of the Earth's continents and by the raising sea level. And essentially these, quote unquote, as they put it, these great floods poisoned the ocean back in the Cambrian period. And in order to survive, they said animals had to evolve new ways to get rid of all the poison from the chemical weathering that was happening from all these rocks now being submerged in the ocean. And so that caused organisms to now suddenly use this genetic potential that they apparently had for over 100 million years that they weren't using. And they started building things like shells and bones and other hard tissues and all kinds of diverse, complex body plans. And then, according to the paper, you got into an evolutionary arms race where the organisms had to evolve more and more complex adaptations in order to fight one another off and eat each other. So there you go. Essentially, here's the formula for how they tried to explain the Cambrian explosion. They said, first, we have the genetic capacity to produce all known animal body plans without any apparent adaptive benefit in some unknown hypothetical ancestral organism. They just assert that this happened. And then this organism just sits there for 100 million years, not evolving into anything differently, despite the fact that it has, for no apparent reason, all this genetic potential to evolve into all these diverse body plans. And then all you need is this environmental trigger to release this cascade of evolutionary consequences. You can choose one, you can choose five. They happen to choose chemical weathering plus a sea level rise plus the oxygenation of the oceans, okay? And then for no apparent reason, that triggers the explosive birth of all these diverse body plans. And then you get an arms race that ensues, and all that untapped genetic information suddenly becomes expressed, and boom goes the dynamite. You get all these new body plans that appear. So there you have it, the Cambrian explosion explained quite simply. Well, there's one problem. They never, in any of these steps, account for the origin of the new information needed to build these body plans. And I'm sorry, but it's not the case that simply raising the sea level and increasing chemical weathering and putting oxygen into oceans somehow generates new biological information. If you're going to explain the origin of new biological information, you have to explain the origin of new biological information. And this doesn't even attempt to do that. So really, this was, in our opinion, it was a pretty anemic attempt to address Meyer's thesis without even mentioning his book's name. And this is sort of what we're up against. People who want to pretend like they have all the evidence on their side and that their opponents aren't even worth mentioning. Meanwhile, they're really not engaging the arguments that we're making.
Wow, it really sounds that the evidence is being ignored in favor of an approach that seems more like a story tale.
It definitely is a story, and there's no problem in evolutionary biology to tell stories, provided that your story accounts for the evidence that you see. I mean, your evolutionary biologists will tell stories all the time. Often the stories don't explain the data. In this case, their story about the Cambrian explosion doesn't say anything about where new information comes from.
So moving on to more about Marshall, could you describe to us some of the highlights from Meyer's debate with Marshall on the radio?
Sure. And I should say this as well. I mean, I want to commend Charles Marshall. He didn't fall into this trap of just using these really sort of simplistic explanations of, oh, we have chemical weathering and a rise in sea level, and that's all we need to explain the Cambrian explosion. Marshall actually did try to engage the issue of the origin of the new information and the body plans. And as Steve Meyer points out, even rewiring these developmental gene regulatory networks, that's going to require new information. So even though he was sort of going in the right direction, he never actually officially accounted for how that new information arose. And in fact, in a radio debate that Steve Meyer and Charles Marshall had on a British radio show, Marshall actually conceded that he basically pushes the question of the origin of the genetic information back. And he never really addresses it. And it's just sort of assumed to be there. We thought that was a very big admission from Charles Marshall, that really nobody, as far as Steve Meyer's opponents go, has offered an explanation for the origin of new genetic information. Now, another interesting point that came out of that radio debate was that Marshall basically said that Steve Meyer's fossil section of the book was good scholarship. And that was interesting because, you know, we had other people claiming, and maybe we'll talk about this in other podcasts, that Meyer had overstated the length of the Cambrian explosion or other problems related to the fossil evidence. Marshall actually said in the radio debate that Meyer's treatment of the fossil record in the Cambrian was, in fact, good science and good scholarship.
So, Casey, this sounds like it's quite an interesting discussion with Marshall, both through his review and through Meyer's debate with Marshall on the radio, where Marshall and Myers really agree on the fossil record, but when it comes down to the central question of Meyer's book, the cause of the origin of new information, Marshall really doesn't have the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, and we'll probably get into this in another podcast, Marshall, I think, does at various points agree with Meyer's description of the fossil record. In his review in the journal Science, he did make some complaints about the small shelly fossils and the length of the Cambrian explosion. We'll probably talk about that later and show how in other places Marshall actually has conceded that Meyer's position on those topics is right. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Marshall's big beef with Darwin's doubt was not his description of the fossil record, but it had to do with the origin information, which was a problem that Marshall really didn't resolve.
Again, the book is titled Debating Darwin's Doubt. Casey, thank you so much for coming on the show with
us. Thank you.
I'm Sarah Chaffee with ID the Future. Stay tuned for more with Casey Luskin on the book Debating Darwin's Doubt.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.